Coming up on AI Having a Clue.
This is quite unlike me.
What's happening?
We talk technology and theme parks.
As we welcome King of the Theme Parks, Len Testa.
Is to use artificial intelligence to enhance how you look on ride photos. The knowledge that ChatGPT has gained on how to make a Mickey Mouse cartoon then becomes available to everyone, like you and me. Disney's using AI in an audio model to listen for high-pitched squeals.
Are you okay? Hello and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue, brought to you with KPMG, the podcast where we explore the wild world of AI. I am AI novice George Butler, and you are
Slightly better than average human, also AI expert James Chandler.
That was semi humble.
Yeah,
Started off well.
Yeah,
derailed at the end. What was the one you had the other day?
Professor of Prompts.
No, the other one.
Poet Laureate of Large Language Models.
Yeah, you can't even say that without laughing.
That's a good one. You are so buoyed up for today.
We've had a lot of different guests on the show. And I'm always team, let's not say skeptic, but I am.
You could say skeptic.
Okay, I do enjoy it when we get a skeptic on the show. last week.
Oh, you had your fill last week.
Oh, my word. So here's the thing. Last week, it was so skeptical that I thought, actually, I need to embrace technology today.
Nice.
But I want to do it on my terms, on my territory. In my wheelhouse.
With your mate.
Well, I booked today's guest.
Oh, unbelievable.
He's a friend of mine.
Okay.
He's a very clever man.
But he knows something about AI.
He knows something about AI. Fine. Because I booked King of the Theme Parks, Len Testa. Now, let me tell you about Len. This man knows everything there is about theme parks. He's built a business, a hugely successful business called Touring Plans. Okay. It's absolutely amazing.
Right.
Helps save people hours and hours in line when they pay all that money and they go to Orlando for theme parks. It's brilliant. He's a computer scientist. We'll get into all of this. He is the co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World and hosts this brilliant podcast all about theme parks called The Disney Dish. Now, there is no one, I genuinely think, no one that knows more about theme parks than
Wow.
He's written about in newspapers across the world. He is an expert in this space and he also really understands technology. And that's why he's going to tell us today all about technology in themed entertainment, because we've talked about this a lot before.
Yeah. You went to Florida.
I did.
Earlier this year.
You went October last year.
If I remember, you weren't that impressed. You went looking for the AI, but you weren't that impressed with it.
Yeah, there was some interesting facial recognition stuff, but maybe not as much as I thought there could be. And I've got my theories on why, but you know what? Let's ask Len about it.
He's the expert.
Let's find out more.
He's the king of theme parks.
King of theme parks. I mean, we've got a bit of an introduction for him, but I don't think we could big him up any more than we already have. So let's just say hello, Len Testa. Len, hello and welcome to AI Having a Clue. How are you?
I'm well, George. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Hello, James.
Hey.
It's lovely to have you on the show. I know a bit about your background, but I think before we kind of get into AI and themed entertainment, before we get into how you're using it to help people have better holidays, let's take a step back, because your background is in computer science. I know that's what you kind of studied, and you, in a way, back in your kind of educational days, studied artificial intelligence, maybe before it became the thing that it is now.
That's right. So my master's thesis is in computer science, and it's in a field of artificial intelligence called evolutionary algorithms, where you give the computer a problem to solve, and you don't tell it how to solve the problem. You tell it what a good answer would look like. And through the process that mimics natural selection, like evolution in a computer, it eventually will find either an optimal solution to your problem or something very, very close. The first time I ran it and it actually solved a problem, honestly, it looked like magic to me. You know, it's not, obviously, but it's really interesting to see a computer come up with a strategy for solving a problem that I hadn't thought of before.
It might be worth starting just on Disney, because obviously it's a company that you are, some would say an expert in, Len. And we've been talking on the podcast in previous months about how Disney have stuck their toe into the water of AI, then quickly jumped out of that pond because they were a bit worried. We've seen it with their kind of very short-lived partnership with OpenAI. As a business, what's Disney's attitude towards this new technology and potentially what are their concerns, which they clearly have because this partnership was so short-lived?
I think they're in an era right now of what I would describe as cautious experimentation. So there are a lot of things that they do behind the scenes with AI to speed up different processes. Like if they're making a television show or a movie with special effects, they understand that using AI to do the computer graphics stuff, the rendering pipeline for computer graphics, is relatively low risk, high reward. They can bring things to market faster and cheaper by using that. I think the issue where everyone is concerned, not just Disney, but entertainment companies or media companies in general, I think the big issue where they're concerned about is the question of who owns the data inside a large language model like ChatGPT when it's trained to do things like make videos of Mickey Mouse.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And we have talked at length about this before. Because as you said, there is a real question mark over IP and who.
Yeah. And IP I think is the big barrier for them. It's intellectual property, not like, is it physically possible to do this? Yeah.
Where are the kind of the deep-rooted concerns in this area?
Imagine you're Disney and you succeed in teaching ChatGPT how to create a realistic-looking 7-minute cartoon of Mickey Mouse, right? Disney clearly owns the cartoon because that's in the United States what we would call a work for hire. You've paid somebody to do a task. The output of that task is yours because you paid for it, right? The interesting thing, though, is in the process of training a large language model like ChatGPT, how to draw Mickey Mouse and what it means for a Mickey Mouse cartoon to be realistic, right? ChatGPT learns how to draw Mickey Mouse, right? That's what you've asked it to do. So without specific guardrails in place, the knowledge that ChatGPT has gained on how to make a Mickey Mouse cartoon then becomes available to everyone, like you and me, right? Even if it's a private model that isn't available to the public, it's common for ChatGPT to train the next generation of models on the previous generation of models. So that information on how to draw a Mickey Mouse cartoon would get passed on to subsequent models. And the interesting thing from, I think, a legal perspective is the way that ChatGPT knows how to draw Mickey Mouse is essentially a series of numbers inside its memory. Who owns those numbers, right? Because it's not the Mickey Mouse cartoon itself. It's the numbers inside of the model that teach the large language model itself how to draw Mickey Mouse. Who owns that? And I think the legal area here is sufficiently gray or sufficiently unexplored that Disney is hesitant to give any company that sort of capability. And the interesting thing too is, if you look at some of Disney's recent U.S. patent filings, they're actually working on ways to be able to trace how a large language model learned a particular piece of information so that you can say things like, yes, your LLM knows this, but it knows it because of me.
There is a case, isn't there, which is, there are billions of images of Mickey Mouse on the internet across different publishers, and a large language model could hoover all of those up, and when you sort of crunch them together and get the numbers, it could draw you a pretty good Mickey Mouse. So I wonder if there's a sort of a reframing thing here, which is like, would Disney not be better off giving them almost, you know, here's the sort of the real, the genuine Mickey Mouse so that you can tell that it's Mickey because it's come from us rather than it's been sort of trained to do anything else? You kind of put the guardrails around it that way. If it's Mickey, it's got to be our Mickey. And if it's something else, then it's kind of not ours.
We've seen a little bit of this from recent changes to large language models. So in the past month, companies like OpenAI or Anthropic have stopped letting you give prompts like, write me a Harry Potter story in the style of J.K. Rowling, right? And you can't do that. You can't say, you know, write a story about blackbirds like ravens in the style of Edgar Allan Poe. You can't do that anymore. So rather than prevent the training from happening, they're preventing the inference phase from happening. the problem is there are ways to get around that. And so it's an arms race at that point, right? Can you be more clever than the 1 million people who are trying to get the LLM to do something it's not? And the answer is probably you can't, right?
Enough IP chat. Let's talk about...
There we go.
George wants to get into theme parks. Come on.
I want to get into theme parks. Let's talk about AI in the themed entertainment space. I suppose, firstly, how we've seen it show up so far. And I guess also we'll get into kind of what's in the pipeline, what is exciting and new, and how they might be implementing some of this technology. But so far, Len, have we seen much practical use of AI in these billion-dollar theme parks?
Not directly. We've the first set of things that were adopted for AI tended to be things like back office tasks, like predicting staffing needs. How many people do I need inside the park to run it? Things like managing hotel reservations. I've seen interesting patents where Disney's using AI in an audio model to listen for high-pitched squeals that would indicate a ball bearing on a roller coaster wheel is going bad and allow Disney to replace it rather than the ride fail unexpectedly and shut the ride down. So that's really interesting. I think Universal Parks are also prototyping the use of image recognition cameras that help it better estimate how long you're going to wait in line. And that might be the most guest-facing obvious thing that we've seen so far in the parks. The other thing that's sort of like back end that Disney's done, I know, is to use artificial intelligence to enhance how you look on ride photos. You know, like when you're going down a Flume ride and it captures a picture of you going, woo, yeah. I want to make sure that everyone's in focus, that they can airbrush out anything.
I was wondering why my teeth looked so white in that Splash
exactly,
Mountain
yeah.
photo.
I'm in Hollywood there. Yeah. So those are a couple of things there. The more interesting things haven't appeared in the parks yet, but we're getting close.
What are we close to? What's coming that is looking like it could be exciting?
The most interesting patent that I've seen, again, it comes from Disney. Universal's doing the same thing, though, is to train a large language model to talk with guests using an avatar from one of Disney's characters. So imagine walking up to a screen and instead of, tapping on it to find out where you want to eat lunch, imagine having Donald Duck engage in a conversation with you about what kind of food you like and where you want to eat. And so the natural language processing capabilities of a large language model come in handy there. Obviously, Disney wants to make sure that the language model behind the scenes knows how Donald Duck would talk. So behind the scenes, it's feeding it, you know, like every Disney, every Donald Duck film or TV show or comic book that's ever been made. But that is a really interesting use of LLMs to allow it to have dynamic, spontaneous conversations with guests in the parks. I think that's really, really interesting.
Have Disney been, or Universal or any of the other theme parks out there, been bold enough to try and apply some of that into their characters? So I don't know, let's say one of the Star Wars robots could roam the parks and have interactions with people in attendance there.
Not yet. I mean, I think a lot of that is more legal liability than anything else. Imagine if an autonomous Star Wars robot ran over a small child's foot. There are issues there. So those things tend to be human controlled. In terms of conversations, that's a little bit more safe.
I feel like there's that spontaneity as well with humans that can kind of deal with unexpected situations. Like, you know, it's bad enough if you're using a chatbot to talk to your car insurance provider. And you know that awful bit where you kind of get to the end and they're like, oh yeah, we can't help you with this, you know, phone this number. And it's this awful customer experience. Like, imagine that at Disney, you're talking to Moana and you ask her something she can't answer. She goes, yeah, I'll just go and find you. Go and talk to guests. It's like that awful, the magic is over in that instant. Whereas I think a human could maybe start out, someone faints in front of them or, you know, they spill candy floss. You know, humans are pretty good at that stuff.
But that's a really good point because, one of the reasons people love going to these parks is because it is this very deep connection that they have. It's very human first. And are you seeing, Len, that I guess organizations like Disney are being so cautious about protecting the humanity at the core of these places, that the thing that makes them so special, that maybe they're a little bit fearful of what artificial intelligence might do?
So first of all, every large company fears the unknown, right? Disney especially. I think the big concern for them would be not necessarily whether the guests believe that they're talking to Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse, you know, in a scenario like that, but what happens when things go wrong. Like to James's point, you're having a conversation with Donald Duck and, you know, you suddenly feel faint and need to sit down. A human would know what to do there. I'm guessing the large language model is not trained on that particular scenario.
It would just quack.
But imagine it was, right? Imagine you had to hire, your Disney, and you had to hire 50 people to pretend to faint 50 different ways so the large language model could understand what to do. Like, I think that's a very funny outcome of all of this, yeah.
We've seen a lot, Len, in things like TV shows where AI might be able to kind of personalize your journey and give you an individual narrative within something. Could you see technology being applied that way into some of the rides to kind of enhance experiences? Is there anything that you think would be quite a cool use of that technology in attractions?
So there was a really interesting patent that Disney filed a couple of years ago, and it was having a computer vision system recognize two things. One, as you're riding through a ride, well, what specific things are you focusing on in the ride? And then number two, what is your emotional response from your face as to the things you're seeing? And they would use that information to send you down one of two paths in a ride. So imagine you're in a ride like Snow White's Scary Adventure, which is, it tells the story of Snow White. And for some children, it's mildly frightening, right? Imagine you could sense while a family is on board the ride, whether the small children are enjoying the ride or becoming scared from it. And then they could dynamically send you down one of two paths, the path that goes through the scary parts of the story or the part that immediately sends you to the ending where everything is happy and everyone's back together. I think dynamic storytelling inside of a ride based on real-time clues as to whether you're enjoying the story is a really interesting use of AI.
James,
yo.
You love to wang on about the team you manage, don't you?
Oh, you mean my empire?
Yeah. So a question for you, as a manager, in this new era of artificial intelligence, do you feel an urgency to use AI?
I think it's hard not to feel like it's a technology that we all need to be exploring. And, you know, anyone who buries their head in the sand, looking at no one in particular, will very likely be left behind.
You were looking at me. But I'm assuming there's a big difference, though, between using AI as like a little cool experiment, which we've seen on the show happen before, and then actually scaling it across an entire workforce and business.
Interestingly, KPMG have found that 65% of UK organisations are committed to AI investment regardless of immediate ROI, return on investment for the uninitiated.
Oh, thank you.
So the intent is there to go big with implementation, but pulling off the execution, as we know very well, can be very hard. George, you know this. You know, Shakespeare does AI was a complete disaster.
Hey, that almost went viral, James.
That being said, businesses could benefit from KPMG, who are here to bridge that gap. They combine strategy with powered delivery to move you from caution to confidence. It's more than just about software. It's about workforce adoption and responsible governance. KPMG helps you make the difference by ensuring AI delivers real business impact at scale. So you don't just listen to AI having a clue every week and keep up with the hype, but actually lead through it.
Although you definitely should still listen to AI having a clue every week.
Yeah, of course. Find all the resources you need at kpmg.com/UK to see how you can help your organization scale. We got into this big debate with advertising, weirdly, where when the sort of advent of digital came along and you could personalize an ad for, you know, the one person on a Tuesday at 4 o'clock who stood outside Leicester Square with a red umbrella, you could give them the ad that was kind of perfect from that one time.
Yeah,
we sort of overdosed on that. And what we forgot is that the fact that millions of us sit down and watch a Disney film and we all see the same thing, that means we can go into school and to playgrounds and to work the next day and talk about it, and it creates these cultural moments. So there is a danger that, you know, 10 people end up with 10 different rides on this thing, and, you know, I think it has its benefits, but it's sort of like that thrilling bit where you race round the mountain and that's the thing you can talk about with other people. And if some people get the sort of slightly easier route because they looked a bit scared, you know, I'm pro and against these things, but
I do think this idea of having shared cultural moments, particularly when you've spent a lot of money going to these things, is really important. This is quite unlike me.
What's happening? You're like usually more like no, but I totally
big softy.
Exactly.
He's worn me down.
I've got to him. Len, let's talk about your business touring plans. Now, I've used this many times.
Have you?
Oh yeah. Now, Len, I don't want to embarrass you here, but you know people spend a lot of money, especially in the UK.
Goodness, yeah.
Going, well, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's a very expensive thing going to these parks, as Len knows more than anybody. And when you go and you've spent all that money, the last thing you want to do is waste hours and hours waiting in long lines. Now, yeah. Touring plans is this genius thing, and you put in the rides you want to do, and it gives you the perfect order to do them, and it saves hours.
Oh,
in,
I mean, nice.
It's been proven. It says hours and hours. It's amazing. It's absolutely brilliant. Now, Len, this is a product that you've created, and I know the technology that you've used for this has gone on to be used in the pharmaceutical industry and in lots of other interesting ways. But this is something that is you've kind of had for a while now. To me, it sounds like artificial intelligence. It sounds like an AI product, not an LLM, but an AI product. Yeah. Would you agree? Is it an AI product? And if so, are you just way ahead of the times?
Yeah, actually it is. It's so the touring plan software, the thing that tells you which rides to go to and when, came directly out of my master's thesis, which is evolutionary algorithms. So that's a form of AI. And that's been 25 years. It's kind of funny because every once in a while, I'll go back and look at the you know, I have to update the source code, right? The computer program that creates the touring plans. And the initial line of the initial section of the very top of the first part of that program is a date in 1997 when I started it. And I'm like, there are people using this software that weren't born when I wrote this code. And that makes me feel old. But yeah. But we also use, you know, modern tools. We use large language models like Claude and ChatGPT every day to help with things like data analytics, help to tell if you're going to wait in line, to predict the optimal time to get one of those ride reservations from Disney called Lightning Lane or from Universal Express. And then sometimes, you know, some of this code, again, dates back 25 years. I've forgotten a lot of it. I use large language models a lot to help with very complicated programming bugs that would take me days to solve. Yeah.
Some people these days might say, well, I don't need touring plans. I'm just going to ask ChatGPT best order to do theme park rides and avoid lines. Now, what would happen if you turned to an LLM and got it to do that?
It's interesting to have done this, obviously. And I think that anybody who knows anything in any particular industry, you could pretty quickly figure out the boundaries of what an LLM is good like. So for our listeners, though, let's give some background here. So the way that a large language model learns is by reading billions and billions of documents and remembering which words are typically associated with other words. So for example, if I were to give you the phrase ulterior, the most common word that comes after that is motive, right? Right. Because ulterior is not generally used without that, or the most common time that you hear ulterior, the next word is motive, right? So the core of an LLM is based on, in part, on knowing which words typically come after other words, right? So a lot of the advice that an LLM gets is along the lines of, this is what most people say as an answer to your question. It's the average opinion from the general public, right? And I'm sure that our listeners have plenty of examples, again, in the industries or the things that they know, where they know something to be true that the general public does not think is true, right? And the problem with that is that if something wrong is repeated enough, the LLM will learn the thing that is wrong and present it confidently as fact. That's the big problem that we face. And in the case of touring plans, one of the big things that we see is people will ask a question about, you know, trip planning or whatever. And sometimes, many times, the answer to the question depends on information you haven't yet provided. Like, for example, what's the best day of the week to visit the Magic Kingdom, right? An LLM will confidently tell you, like, you know, Wednesday or Thursday, something like that. But really, it depends on the time of year because, as you know, George, the Magic Kingdom hosts special events, parties, during Halloween and Christmas season in August, September, October, November, and December, in which the park closes early 3 or 4 days a week. And that greatly affects the crowds on those days. And in fact, the effect is so large that if you looked at it over the course of an entire year, those 4 months affect the answer for the entire year. So really what an LLM should be saying is, instead of just giving you an answer, which it will do, it should say, what month are you going? Because my answer depends on if you're going in January or July. And it doesn't do that yet.
No, but it does give you that sense of authority, doesn't it?
It sounds great. So confident. Yeah.
And I guess it's drawing from things like subreddits and stuff like where, you know, there could be lots of back and forth on people saying lots of things. And I guess what the LLM's trying to do is kind of average out that thing. Because, you know, within a subreddit, there could be 60 different people saying 60 different days of the week and not agreeing. So you're getting an average. Is such a good point.
Len, have you let the LLMs, or have you blocked, I should say, the LLMs from scraping your touring plans data?
Some of them. And the reason is, so it's a tricky thing, right? So you can't block Google without getting delisted from Google search results. That is a tough bargain. But there are certain bots, like anything from China. We don't get very many customers from China. China's blocked. From scraping. We also prevent the bots from scraping images on our site because we pay for that bandwidth. And images obviously are a lot of bandwidth. So, and we have, you know, tens of thousands of images on our site. That's tough. Other times though, it's a trade-off. Like as long as the LLMs will say that we are an authoritative source on an answer to a question, then I'm fine with it. So for example, and I love this, ChatGPT thinks that Touring Plans is an authoritative source, especially for Epcot, which I kind of love. So that's fine, right? If we're getting mentioned in the search results, I can kind of see the value proposition there. But I'll give you another example. Amazon is building a set of LLMs, and its bots scrape our site all the time. We have literally got not a single referral. No person has ever visited our site coming from Amazon's bot. So that is a lopsided relationship there. We're getting nothing. They're getting everything that we know. So I think we're starting to block that as of Monday.
I mean, it's interesting, James. We've had a few conversations, haven't we, about the face of kind of search marketing changing, how if you are a brand, you are all of a sudden having to think about how you are coming out in LLM search results.
Yeah. But by the way, just popped it into chat. What's the best day to go to the Magic Kingdom? The rough pattern is best. Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. Usually decent. Monday or Friday. Slightly busier, Saturday and Sunday. It's basically a non-answer.
It's a non-answer.
It's basically, well, here's 7 days of the week and they're kind of all the same.
It's funny. So if you go to our site, we will actually tell you, like, based on the time of year, what that is. So the LLMs haven't incorporated that knowledge yet, which is really interesting.
How funny.
I will say the other thing, and James, you might have recognized this as well. You know, LLMs are good at associating what word comes next in the sentence. They're not really good with tasks that involve time. So there's something about the fundamental nature of time, the temporal aspect of reasoning, that LLMs haven't quite captured yet. And that for me is really, really interesting because it's fundamental to the problem that I'm trying to solve. Time-dependent scheduling. You know, I like to think that I've spent a little bit more time than the average person thinking about what the nature of time is. But yeah, to see that the LLMs also have the same problem is like, hey, we're all in the same club. That's kind of funny. So,
yeah. Oh, true. How long do I want to spend there? How long do I want to wait in a queue? What time? Yeah. Everything is time dependent in your world.
It'll give you an answer that sounds great. But when you sort of like break, you know, look into the reasoning deeper or say, have you considered this? It all kind of falls apart. Yeah.
And as we found out, James, AI can't tell the time.
It can't tell the time. No. Hang on.
Before we let you go, Len, we do a little game on the show called ChatGPT Roulette. So you're open up your LLM of choice. And we want to find out what the last thing that you asked it for. Now, James and I play along with you. And here's the thing, then.
Okay.
Every single time we play with the guest, James and I have the most boring answers ever. And our guests always come in with something so much more interesting. So we'll go first because otherwise you will show us up. James, first or second?
I'll go first. Can you reheat a baguette that was bought fresh yesterday in an air fryer?
Why would, Are you okay? Of course you can.
160 degrees, 3 to 5 minutes, and it was good.
Well, I could have told you that.
Edible once.
Yeah. George?
Unbelievable. I was at a restaurant, and I'm not a big wine buff. I didn't really know, there was nothing on there that I saw that I particularly knew. I love a Vino Verde. That's my favorite type of wine. So I took a photo of the wine menu and said, which of these wines is most like a Vino
Verde? That's good. That's pretty good.
That's a great query, actually.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's maybe a little bit more interesting than my previous ones. Go on, Len, show us up. What have you asked?
This is me being a nerd. It's, does the NVIDIA CUDA compiler have a tool similar to Valgrind that can check for memory access errors and array out of bounds errors?
We were talking before,
you think it had
George, actually.
I mean, I was debating it, and I spent...
What a query!
It actually answered it for me and then fixed the problem, too. I slept.
Yeah. Come on.
All of our problems were fixed. Hooray, hooray.
Well, once again, a guest has come on and been much more intelligent and interesting than we have. So, well done, James. Mm. Well done, James. Len, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you.
It was so fascinating, Len.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
So, James, are you now a theme park fan after hearing about them?
So good. What an interesting combination of sort of computer science and doing AI before AI was trendy, and theme parks, and then what he's created in the sort of touring plans thing. It's just sort of this lovely thing that actually solves a problem. That's what I liked about it. It solves problems. It makes people's experience at these theme parks, which they spent a lot of money doing and a lot of time getting there, even better. I like that.
My favourite thing about Len and that whole story is he clearly has a passion for the parks. Mm. He is a clever guy, and he's sort of applied his brains to solve a big issue. It's helped a lot of people. But the thing that I always find amazing is that technology, because theme parks are fun, they're frivolous, that technology has gone on to do really meaningful, impactful things, and like the pharmaceutical industry. So I just find that a fascinating journey. But
I also thought he was really interesting on how when you asked him the question about, are you letting LLMs scrape?
Yes,
because this is a gold mine, his data, and he's been really intentional about who the sort of trade off. Like, what's he getting out of it? Is it a fair kind of trade off? And he talked about Amazon. He talked about Google, but.
The one thing I will follow up about, because it'd be fascinating to say, to find out from a marketing point of view, because we talk about this all the time and about how you need to use LLMs. And he said about Amazon providing nothing. I should have asked, and I will find out about whether ChatGPT does provide new business, and actually if that payoff is worth it.
Yeah, it's worth letting them scrape it if they can give him back referrals.
Yeah,
which is what every publisher, media owner is wrestling with, I guess.
Yeah, really, really
interesting. He was wonderful. Well done. Bring more of your friends, please.
I shall. I don't have any
actually,
more.
I withdraw that.
Like, it's just you. You're my...
I'm a colleague, I'm not a friend.
Friend.
Co-host. I wouldn't go as far as friend.
Well, on that note, I suppose we better say goodbye. And we'll be back on Friday.
Might be.
Yeah, just me on my own. Covering all the latest news from the world of AI, James's big thing. And of course, our listener question shall return. If you have a question you'd like to ask James and you'd like to win yourself an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt, drop us an email.
Just ask it.
Ask it. AIHaven'tAClue@gmail.com. For now, thanks to Team AI Haven't a Clue. Thank you for listening. And James, until Friday,
just stay curious, will you?